When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codename Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It is time for our weekly listener mail segment. And we have some doozies for you today, folks. Before we begin, though, I would like to put out a very special thank you to everybody who responded with clarifications on our previous last week's strange news, where we talked a little bit about ghost guns. Thank you for everybody who took the time to write in with those clarifications. We always look forward to this, because these kinds of messages are mission critical to our show. And more importantly, they're helpful to your fellow conspiracy realists. So please look forward to an episode that's going to be coming out in a few weeks.
Yeah.
Days.
For sure.
Weeks, called The Rise of Ghost Guns.
Yeah. And I would just say personally, you know, I've listened back to a few parts of that, and I can see where the criticism was coming from on my part. So I just want to say we hear you. I hear you. And we're going to address some of those things.
Matt, what did you do?
I would just say on my part, what I did, Noel, was I think I may have conflated a little bit of my story with Ben's story, maybe too much. So that's on me. I didn't mean to do that. I think it was overall confusing. So
I see. And yeah. As usual, I was out of my mind on ether.
which typical Ben.
Typical.
Typical. I gotta ask the guys. I've heard a little bit about ghost guns just in the news recently, and how it was the first time I'd heard the term, I think, because it was coming up, you know, in the wake of some of these recent mass shootings, in terms of like, here's a thing that we can make illegal, right? And probably would be an easy fix, at least for that type of thing. There's probably a lot more to be done, but that certainly seems like one that's problematic. But it reminds me of the movie. Oh, I think it's called In the Line of Fire.
Yes, where, John Malkovich.
Where Clint Eastwood plays a CIA agent who was protecting John F. Kennedy and, you know, like failed. And then in the modern day, he's like a grizzled, kind of bitter old man, you know, Clint Eastwood. And John Malkovich plays this like genius assassin who has this like plastic composite gun that he, you know, can sneak through security, and then he hides the bullet in a lucky rabbit's foot. Don't think that's the same as ghost guns, but that's what I always think of when I hear that.
Jeez, spoilers, Noel. God.
Well, it's. Sorry, you guys. Mean a spoiler on Clint Eastwood's range?
Do you want him as grizzled or extra grizzled?
Yeah, it is. It's like going, he's a great American actor and director. And Gran
and
Turismo.
A great American. Let's just leave it at that.
Well, I've never met him, but Gran Torino is a fantastic film.
Get off my lawn, Ben. Get off my lawn.
And so yes, thank you. We do, as we said, read every email. We get to every piece of correspondence. They're important to us because your time is important, and you have taken the time to reach out to us. And in that way, to reach out to your fellow listeners. So the least that we can do is gratefully take the time to hear you and hear what you have to say. With that in mind, today we're going to hear from several of our fellow conspiracy realists. And I've got to say, you know, Noel, knowing who we're going to be, you know, vicariously speaking with today, I think the correspondent that you chose has my favorite name, because they're the only one who like picked a nickname.
That's not true, though. There's two in there this week.
Really? Oh. We have been getting some doozy nicknames, so I guess you would like me to go first. I am absolutely fine with this. My listener mail comes from someone who very specifically asked not to be named by name, but signed this email. I'm just going to read the email and then do the sign off, because you really need to hear the content before you understand the meaning of the nickname. And it goes a little something like this. Hi, guys. Thanks for all the quality entertainment this past year. I was wondering if you could touch upon the possibility of fur farms in China, not labs, being the source of COVID-19 and variants. It seems to me that this is the most likely source for the outbreak, and China is the current world leader in mink fur. Best concerned mink.
Concerned me.
Concerned mink.
A concerned mink. I completely agree. And minks, to me, always kind of have the appearance of being concerned, because it turns out they're good for a lot of things, not just making mink coats, which I thought fur had really fallen out of fashion. Even with like the high end, you know, bespoke fashion lines, it seems like sort of a no-no, right? Like, don't you get red paint thrown on you if you walk down the street in a fur coat or a mink stole?
Well, it depends on where you go, because we have, you know, a lot of different parts of the world have different opinions about not just animal rights, but also what does or does not qualify as like high fashion versus something gauche. So the fur industry, at least pre-pandemic, the fur industry was still doing pretty well. There are always going to be moves to prevent that practice of growing animals and slaughtering them for fur. But there's a lot of money to be made. There's more money to be made selling those coats than there is to stop selling them. As cold as that sounds, would you guys agree?
No, I would. And to your point, Ben, in terms of cultural, you know, mileage may vary situations in terms of opinions on fur. I mean, that's true of like what would or would not be considered food. You know, like, you know, for in some Asian countries, like dogs are slaughtered pretty regularly for meat. And that is very much the case with fur as well. In China, the main species that are harvested for their fur are mink, fox, and raccoon dog. And respectively, according to a fabulous article that the Concerned Mink sent us on The Conversation, 21, 17, and 12 million respective animals slaughtered each year. And that's from 2018. So that would be 21 million mink, by far the largest number in that group of most popular animals to harvest for their fur. And as we know, in many situations, like with these wet markets that we've heard so much about, there isn't as much environmental, humanitarian, or even sanitary oversight over some of these facilities in Asian countries, in China in particular. And because of that, it does lead to some situations that could result in viruses being spread unexpectedly, especially when there's like a new, you know, variant of one. Because it turns out that minks, which are referred to as mustelids, have you guys heard of this?
Yeah.
M-U-S-T-E-L-I-D-S. I'd never heard that word before. Are susceptible to the SARS-CoV-2 virus, which is the coronavirus. And there's, you know, more science-y specifics in this article if you want to get more into the minutia of it. But it makes a pretty good case as to how this could have resulted from an unchecked mink farming operation rather than specifically that wet market. And it is it has to do with the fact that, as we know, the coronavirus is a zoonotic disease. It can bounce from an animal to a different species, like a human. And that's what makes it particularly dangerous and easy to spread.
And this also means, to be clear, that animals can spread this infection to one another. Humans, of course, is the part we focus on, but mustelids are, it's an umbrella term. It's a family of everything from otters to wolverines to badgers.
Ferrets, I imagine. Oh, badgers, my heavens.
That's... And martens as well. You're absolutely right. Concerned Mink is raising a very important point. It's something that other places have speculated about in the West. Like National Geographic also did an article where they asked whether there was a missing link in these fur farms. And honestly, to steal a line from our buddy Niels, the thing about the origin and spread of COVID-19 is that at this point, it's such a recent and ongoing event that there's still a lot of questions people are trying to answer. And asking those questions does not necessarily make you, the next candidate for a tinfoil hat. I think a lot of people, actually, you know what, a lot of people might not remember. There's maybe this stereotype that's wrapped up in a little bit of latent racism that makes people assume that China is the world's number one exporter of mink in specific. That's not true. It's Denmark. And that's why, like, not too long ago, they slaughtered 15 to 17 million minks because some had tested positive for a variant of coronavirus. I mean, it's a very real concern. Like you were saying, Noel, these animals are vulnerable to this and they can spread it to humans. So even if the origin of COVID in mustelids was, attributable to what scientists currently believe it's attributable to, that doesn't mean that it couldn't have made that leap from someone working in one of these fur farms.
That's right. And it's interesting because a recent study showed that, in fact, quite a few species are susceptible to SARS-CoV-2, including primates and other carnivores. But the authors of the study, and again, this is from this article in The Conversation, want to make it clear to not overinterpret these types of predictions and use it as a means of spreading kind of alarmism, but also just, you know, kind of be aware. It said, specifically the quote is, they wanted to stress the importance of avoiding overinterpreting the predictions put forward and point out that the experimental and observational data in the field are required. So it's like, okay, yes, we know that these animals are susceptible, but we need to actually track you know, the spread of this through these various animal communities before, you know, rushing to judgment and thinking this is definitely what it's all about. But whatever the case might be, overall, infectious diseases, they are up significantly from the mid 20th century. And they're particularly prevalent in parts of the world that are, let's just say, affected by the human race, you know, where man is kind of bulldozing natural areas and limiting animal biodiversity, let's just say, and capturing wild animals. And that's why I think the wet market was such a target, is because that is a hotspot or a hub where there's tons of different species all kind of commingling, sometimes in cages right on top of each other. We've talked about this in some of our COVID-19 episodes, and that can lead to the spread of these diseases.
Yeah, for sure. That's the thing that I think a lot of people need to understand. There's a nuance here. So yes, the World Health Organization concluded that the odds of a lab-manufactured origin of COVID are very, very low. It's highly unlikely that that happened, but there are still these very serious unanswered questions about exactly when, where, and how SARS or COVID-19 first got into human beings, how it made the leap. And one thing that could happen, I would argue, and I think this goes to your question concerned me, one thing that could easily have happened, and actually probably did happen, is that wet markets or regions where people were interacting with wild animals became these clusters, like these secondary clusters. So an additional explosion, right, that further gassed up the spread of the infection. Saying that a human being was infected by COVID-19 at a wet market or at a fur factory or something like that is not the same thing as saying that is definitely the origin. But looking at the math, looking at the science, looking at the vectors, it had to have happened. It had to have been spreading. And then, yes, it's terrible for the business to have to destroy a bunch of minks like Denmark did. But what other choice are you going to have? What are you going to tell somebody who is desperately hoping and praying that their dying relative can get a ventilator? Are you going to tell them, sorry, I'm a coat man?
Just want to reiterate here that no matter what you believe the origins are of this pandemic, you know, COVID-19 and all of this, the best experts appointed by the WHO, by all of these organizations that you may not even necessarily trust, all are saying that we don't have the full answers. We have most likely probabilities, essentially, based on what we have found, what we can prove. So, you know, if you're still feeling a little weird about it, that's okay. But, you know, just remember that nobody knows right now, but we're still trying to track it down.
That's exactly right. And all of this anti-Asian sentiment, you know, and the rhetoric around it and the actual actions that has led to in certain members of the population is just heartbreaking, because it's, you know, whatever the case might be, if there are conditions that might make these markets and these types of factories and or factory farming situations more susceptible to spreading these kinds of viruses, is certainly of no fault of the, you know, individual human beings that live in that country. So that kind of misplaced anger just really boggles my mind. But one thing that's interesting about this type of disease, this zoonotic virus, is it can travel both ways. Like, humans can get animals sick with it as well. We have had cases, I think you guys might remember, there was a tiger. I think it was in the Detroit Zoo, but I might be wrong. There have been cases found in domestic cats and dogs. And also there's a captive lions, I believe, and farmed minks and gorillas, where it's humans that are actually giving the disease to the animal, or the virus to the animals. And that's called reverse zoonosis. and
it was a tiger in the Bronx Zoo.
That's exactly right. I knew it was a B thing. I said Detroit. I'm just wrong, Matt. You got me. And this is particularly true of these muselets, or muselets, however the pronunciation goes. And I think this is something that is potentially of concern to China's economy, because, you know, this this fur farming industry is quite a lucrative operation, you know, and it accounts for quite a bit of income for the economy. And there are discussions being had as to whether more oversight needs to be brought to it, or whether it needs to be shut down, or certain operations need to be shut down. So it's something to kind of keep an eye on, but I'm sure that it is making some proprietors of these facilities pretty nervous.
Let's just plant more hemp, guys. Let's make more hemp clothes and get rid of the fur. Let's do it.
It's a shame you can't plant ether. You know what I mean? Sorry, guys. I was off huffing.
You monster.
It's got an ether farm up in the foothills.
Exactly. We can keep this one short. I think we, you know, because again, I think people are kind of getting COVID fatigue at this point, but I do think this is an interesting development and something to keep an eye on. So thank you to Concerned Mink for passing this one along to us. And we're going to take a quick sponsor break and be right back with more strange news.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC
was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. And without any kind of introduction, let's just listen to the message left to us by our good friend Mal.
Hey guys, I just thought I had an interesting thing for your Strange News podcast, which I love, by the way. It's a bit old, a couple of weeks ago here in Vancouver, in BC, three Masonic halls got burnt down by one guy. I haven't really looked into his motives. I can't really find much on why he did it or anything, if he was a Freemason or whatever, but I thought if you could find anything out or if you have any discussion points on that, it would be pretty interesting. You can use my voice on the podcast if you want to. You can refer to me as Mal Reynolds. That's not my name, but I'm a big Firefly fan. Thanks, guys. Love your work. See you later.
Now I see what you're saying. Now I see what you're saying, Matt, about that nickname. Oh,
I thought it'd be more fun if you discovered it.
You were right. Thank you for that moment.
Call me Mal Reynolds. That's one of my favorite characters ever put to the screen, or the small one, or we played it on a big one in my house.
So this is something that I was not aware of this. This is pretty troubling.
I saw one little news segment on it flash past the r/news Reddit subreddit and clicked on it, looked for a second, but there was no information of what was going on when I first looked at it. This is, again, as Mal said, several weeks ago, and actually it was a while ago now at this point. But I figured we'd at least discuss, and I found a few other stories that I want to mention before we finish this whole section here. So let's start with the most recent fires that were occurring in Masonic lodges in Vancouver. And this is around March, like late March of 2021 when this is occurring. So first I'm going to jump to a Vice News article. It is titled "Police Investigating Arsons After Three Masonic Temples in Vancouver Set on Fire." And as you go through this, you can see that there are a few places. The Masonic Lynn Valley Lodge in North Vancouver, there was a fire there early in the morning around 6:45. Then 15 minutes later, they were at another lodge, this time Duke of Connaught Lodge, number 64. Then 15 minutes after that, so we're talking 1, 2, 3 within the span of 45 minutes. 15 minutes later, 12 kilometers away, Park Lodge Masonic Center went up in flames. But this one wasn't damaged quite as much as the others. So obviously, right off the bat, if you're an investigator or if you're, you know, someone working, you're a fire person and you're responding to these things, you're on a rescue team or something, something's wrong, right? You're getting all of these emergency calls coming in. You realize, okay, there's a targeting that's happening here. Very quickly, though, one man was picked up. And at least according to the story, he was seen walking away from one of the scenes by a few witnesses. So CBC reported, and I'm going to jump over to an article from them. It is titled "Alleged Arsonist Arrested After Three Fires at Masonic Lodges in Metro Vancouver Area." And I'm going to read directly from this article. It says the arrest came after an off-duty police officer driving past one of these Masonic temples that had been targeted. He noticed a man walking away from the building as it burned. And he was like, that's interesting. And You can actually see video. I wasn't able to locate this exact video that's referenced here, but there's a video allegedly that shows one of the temples on fire. This alleged person is walking away carrying what they call a jerry can. So like a gasoline canister. And you think, oh, likely suspect, bit sus. And in that occurrence, a man got away, but they ended up catching up to him and they put him under arrest. And you can only imagine how many more of these fires would have occurred if this person didn't get arrested pretty quickly. Because again, three fires in 45 minutes, that's efficient and someone on a mission.
And just like that Dre and Eminem song, I believe he was caught literally holding a can full of gas.
There you go. It's exactly like that Dre song. Is Eminem in that one?
Yeah, yeah. Can't full of gas, a handful of matches. Still wasn't found out. Yeah. It's true. And
that was really good, man. No, it
was. But thank you. But I'm just saying that because it sounds like something that doesn't usually happen in real life. He was found literally holding a can. And one thing that may be familiar to our listeners in Vancouver that is pretty depressing, I think, to some of us, is that we know this guy's name, and I hate to say it, but he is a Ben. He is a fellow Ben. I apologize on behalf of everybody for Benjamin Coleman. I have a plot twist for you, Matt, Noel, and Doc. If you check the chat, first off, I found his Facebook page. And
you really did?
Mm-hmm, because Bens are tight like that. And we have a Ben sense. And legally, we have to say this guy has not been convicted of anything yet, mm-hmm. right? But I would draw your attention to a post he made on March 30th, or at least this Facebook page. I think it's him, but I don't have hard confirmation yet. Just a lot of things seem to indicate this is the guy's personal page. On March 30th, he posted publicly, quote, "I just cleaned three satanic clubhouses and nobody could do anything."
Whoa.
Oh, my goodness.
He cleaned them. Actually, that quote is referenced by Victoria News, Ben. So I think you're right on the money.
So I guess it must be him, you know, and it's a lesson in OPSEC, if nothing else.
That was made on the day of the fires, too.
Which is a shame. Do we know much about his motivation? I believe that journalists found he had been pretty deep into some anti-Masonic theories earlier.
In the Victoria News, they've posted an article that says online posts appear to link alleged arsonists to Masonic Hall fires in Metro Vancouver. And it goes into a few other things. Like, they're just saying he has a plethora, quote, plethora of other conspiracy theory posts, questioning everything from 5G to the moon landing, to whether the earth is round. Is he a flat earther?
Ooh. Interesting. Maybe. And
now, that was a very sexy ooh you just did this time.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I didn't mean to.
Very quiet storm.
That was for our caller from weeks ago.
Oh, man. But yeah, you know, the thing that stands out about this is, first off, believing in something that most of the other people on the planet don't believe in does not necessarily mean you are mentally ill.
No.
But these sort of actions are indicative of at least some sort of instability, right? Unless there's some other intervening variable of which we're not aware, like maybe personal abuse by someone who in his childhood, by someone who became a Mason, maybe, you know, that's just an example. But there are any number of things that can function as a tipping point or a threshold for these sorts of falling down moments. I'm referencing the film. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember that is a great, film for me.
So what happens now? He's in custody. You also said there was something else to the story with Masonic Halls before this occurred.
I did. And I'm going to do this so fast, Ben. This guy, we didn't mention. He was there. We mentioned that he was seen carrying a jerry can. He ended up getting in a fight with a police officer, an RCMP officer. So he's been charged with one count of arson, the one that they saw him at, and assaulting an officer of the law. So that's what's happening right now with Ben, other Ben, this guy, Coleman. There's going to be more to the story, but right now we don't have much more to report there. What I would draw your attention to, if you go to freemasonsfordummies.blogspot.com. If anyone remembers the book Freemasons for Dummies, it's fantastic. I would recommend it. This is just a blog spot, I guess, dedicated to this book series. And there's just a small little post there from June 2020. There's an Oklahoma Masonic Hall that got hit by arson. And then I started going down a rabbit hole of seeing all of these cases of arson at Masonic halls and other Masonic temples and places of, you know, just meeting places, places of worship. Fascinating how they've been targeted over the years that the internet has been popular. And the earliest, craziest thing I saw comes from 1995. And this comes out of Manchester, New Hampshire. It's an AP news story. We're not going to go fully into this story, but this is something you can look up and something that I want to do maybe a bigger story on. Feels like there's a rabbit hole here. Title of the article is Masons Rocked by Embezzlement, Death Threats, Firebombs, Murder.
Ooh.
And it opens with a man who was found dead in his burning house, who was uncovering a series of embezzlement cases at his own Masonic lodge, right?
Uh-huh.
Sounds like the plot of like a episode of some sort of procedural crime show.
Yeah, let's make a whole other podcast, guys. Or let's do a whole episode on it. It feels really great to me. There's lots of stuff to look up. So anyway, we'll leave you there. Thanks so much, Mal Reynolds. We are going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6
million? Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions.
I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
And we have returned. We did not come alone here. We're coming along with Dan. Dan, here's what you said. Hello, guys. Absolutely love the show. You guys do an amazing job. I love the riffing. Thank you for buttering us up there, Dan. I just listened to an episode of The Journal podcast by Wall Street Journal that discussed, get this, guys, Elon Musk's SpaceX complex in Boca Chica, Texas. A mind-blowing story.
Whoa, was that a verse? Wow.
That's all Dan. You know, little known fact, Dan is a ghostwriter for both Dr. Dre and Eminem. he describes the story as the following. Quote, a mind-blowing story of SpaceX coming to town and taking over. The next step, he says, is incorporation of the town and potentially seizing the last remnants of property through eminent domain. Looks like they are a few steps ahead of Blockchains LLC in Nevada, or Nevada. Sorry, everyone, at creating a corporate autonomous government. Give it a listen. Let me know what you think. Maybe worth a listener mail or strange news discussion. Dan, I had not heard anything about this. Had you guys heard about this?
Not at all.
Nope.
I was aware of, you know, we were aware of the legislation with innovation zones, which got, you know, jammed up after public criticism. But the story of SpaceX, without being alarmist, well, the story of Boca Chica really is troubling. Residents are facing pressure from local officials in the, you know, in the government and from operators in SpaceX to sell their property. Right now, as of last week, SpaceX has purchased more than 100 parcels of land in the area. This is public record. This has been confirmed. And it mostly uses that land to house SpaceX employees. But then several other residents are saying, when they were speaking with Wall Street Journal, they're saying SpaceX had come to them time and time again trying to buy their property, and they're worried things might get ugly for the people who refuse to sell their homesteads. This happens all the time, right? It happens all the time for a company moving in to try to buy up somebody's land, right? Like a Walmart's being built, someone comes in and says, our footprint is going to have to be this many acres. We need to buy up this much stuff around it, right? And that's not necessarily nefarious. That's how business works. But the issue here is one of maybe mission creep, you could call it, because how, like, at what threshold does something become a company town? We talked about the Blockchains LLC proposal. We've also talked about the Reedy Creek Improvement District, which is probably the most successful version of a corporate or a company town, and that is owned by the Big Mouse. So everybody be kind. Don't get us sued into the ground. But here's where we're at right now. In Boca Chica Village, there in Texas, would you care to guess? You guys probably already know, but would you care to guess how many people live there that are not connected to SpaceX?
Zero.
Seven?
You guys are both like, I know we're going low, but you're so close. It's amazing. About 14 people.
Oh, Matt, you win.
Seven homes, two people each?
So there are these stories that are coming out. And one of them comes from a local named Celia Johnson. She told the Journal that she started having issues with employees of SpaceX when she rejected their attempt to buy two of her houses, or two of her properties, rather, that were near the launch site. And then a huge water tank, like a 1,600-gallon water tank on one of her homes, which was a rental, vanished in 2019. And then she came back, and she thought the SpaceX folks stole it. And then she came back, and she found that someone had vandalized her house. Someone shattered it with a brick, had been sleeping there. She and her neighbors accused SpaceX workers of crashing there, which, honestly, that seems a little far-fetched. Or I should say there's no proof of that, but you can tell there's underlying tension. The company denied all responsibility, but they did reimburse her for the tank and the damage to the house.
Oh.
So the locals are saying that they're getting bullied by a large corporation. And, you know, it's weird because I was thinking of our experience. You know, Doc, Noel, Matt, and I all live roughly in the same area of Atlanta Metro. So you guys have probably gotten those weird, maybe a text or something in your mailbox that says, love your home, would like to buy it now. I buy houses, stuff like that. Have you guys gotten those?
Oh, so many voicemails like that. Unsettling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't own a house currently, but I know plenty of folks that do who get solicited all the time. In fact, that's not true. At a house that I rented, we would often get pieces of mail or even like flyers taped to the door, you know, attention to our landlord.
Oh, so, yeah. Yeah. And it's funny, too, because I've been in the same boat as you, Noel, where I would get those and it would trigger just a mini existential, what am I doing with my life
exactly.
crisis.
Exactly. Totally. 100%.
It's like, because there have been points in my life where I get one of those wild cold calls or a message or, like you said, something taped on the door, thrown on the porch. And it may as well have been saying, I'm interested in buying your Rolls Royce. And I'm like, oh, come on, man. I felt broke when I woke up today, and you're just making it worse.
It's on your 93 Tercel?
Yeah, it's on my 93 Tercel. So you nailed it. That was a perfect car joke. So in this case, though, it's different because what we're talking about in our experience in Atlanta is usually going to be what are known as house flippers. And so they mean to buy a house, maybe do some renovation on it, and then sell it for a profit. There's nothing wrong or illegal about that. But what's happening here is that a company is using a tremendous amount of financial muscle to maybe force people into doing things that they ordinarily wouldn't do. Two other locals, Mary and Harvey Bloomer, said that they got an email back in September 2020 offering them a little south of $150,000 for their home. And it came with a warning. It was from the director of finance, David Finley, and he said, your property will frequently fall into a hazard zone in which no civilian would be permitted to remain. So they're like, buy it, because otherwise a rocket might explode on you. Just saying.
Jeez.
Just saying.
Accidents happen. And this has happened to other folks, other residents. You can read the full article. I do recommend the podcast. And thanks to Dan for hipping us to that. Some residents have found that they are getting what are called non-negotiable deals and then additional offers. They're really getting the hard sell. And then to compound the problem, residents are claiming that they think county officials might be in SpaceX's pocket, like that they are also working with SpaceX to get these folks out of their homes or off their properties. And honestly, that's not implausible, because if you think of the tremendous economic boom SpaceX is bringing to this town, it very well could be a bit of a devil's bargain. Arguably not as bad as, say, a prison that gets constructed in a town that desperately needs employment. But still, you know, these people bought their houses because they weren't planning to move. That's why they're not renting.
Yeah, but it's so messed up to do the cold calculus. I don't even know if Elon Musk himself would be making these decisions or looking at the actual numbers. Maybe, But the team of experts goes, oh, okay, so we've got 7 to 14 houses that are currently being occupied that we need to get rid of those people. And then on the other side, the government is thinking, or whoever is representing the group here, well, if those houses are gone, but we have residential areas for all of these other employees, that's going to number in the hundreds. And they're all buying food locally, with taxes plus sales tax, property tax. We could make a lot more money with the SpaceX's employees.
Right. And there's, you know, there is honestly a little bit of a long-term investment / greater good argument. Boca Chica, the community, is overseen by the government of Cameron County. And they have raised their county appraisals of the values of homes. In one case, a home was worth $34,473 when SpaceX made its first offer. And then just a little bit later in 2021, the appraisal shot up to $141,573. Homeowners in the audience, that sounds pretty awesome, right? Especially everybody remembers 2008.
Screw SpaceX. I'm moving to Boca Chica. I can afford a house there. Let's go.
That's right. We do live in a metro area. But also, you know, they may be just doing a hard calculation of value because of what they're predicting about the economy and property prices in the future. But Texas also, this area especially, really doesn't want to lose SpaceX, you know what I mean? It's a prestigious thing for a state to have. Texas already gave $20 million in incentives for the company to expand in Texas. And Elon Musk, this is interesting, back in March, he went on Twitter and pledged to donate $20 million to Cameron County Schools specifically and $10 million to revitalize the downtown area of the county's largest city, Brownsville. And this is before he was on SNL. I don't know why I added that. I just remember. Did you guys see him on SNL?
I did. I saw him on SNL.
You said you were okay with it.
I really enjoyed it, actually.
Shill.
Just kidding.
It was good. It was funny, man. I'm sorry. He's got a stilted delivery. Did you hear what he said? Like he said he was the first person with Asperger's to host,
admitted on stage,
at least the first person to admit it. That's okay, what he said. That was
fair,
his joke.
Fair. It was funny though. I was reading up about it, and on the Instagram account for SNL, I believe, like all of the comments were very negative towards him before the show aired. And then when he came out and said that thing about having Asperger's, it immediately all turned very positive, which is kind of interesting considering that people are just so afraid of being canceled or seen as being ableist in some way that they can like spew all this venom about a guy. And then one little thing, well, was, oh, we actually we loved him all along.
Psych. Yeah.
Well, whatever. Pete Davidson has a recurring character that they produced an incredible like digital short for.
Yes,
I mean, Chad, some of the stuff they can turn around in just a few days with visual effects. I'm like so impressed with that team. I don't know, whatever.
Yeah. It's a great operation. I think Weekend Update is killing it. Murder Durder was a great sketch. Check that one out if you haven't seen it. We're just shouting out because I think we all, you know, watched SNL and we were interested to see what this person, one of the world's wealthiest people, would actually do. So SNL aside, here's where we're at to sew up the story of Boca Chica as it stands now. According to the laws of Texas, to incorporate this village, SpaceX would have to prove to the state that more than 200 people live in the area. It would have to get a majority vote from that area. And then, there's a lot of if-thens here, and then if those two steps are successful, then the officials of SpaceX could secure the power of eminent domain. Eminent domain is the epitome of greater good, right? Eminent domain is what happens when you lose several feet of your front yard because a road needs to be widened. eminent domain is saying that the your local government has certain powers that it can use to, you know, take your property or to make certain alterations in the interest of the greater community. And that kind of stuff is a necessary evil. It does have to exist in many cases. But the fear here for the non-SpaceX residents of the community is that this eminent domain could be used to eject the last people who are still holding out and then allow SpaceX to build a modern day company town. With that in mind, I do want to say the long-term goal here is to get off this planet and go into the stars, go deep into the galactic ink. Is it worth it? It really depends on who you ask, just like our problem with, just like our question, rather, about mink and fur farms and the spread of COVID. At this point, we're going to keep an eye on this. Thank you so much to Dan for hipping us to this story. Thank you to Mal for, at the very least, reminding us to rewatch Firefly. It holds up. It holds up. If you have somehow never seen it, watch it tonight.
In Starbase, Texas, at your Airbnb.
Mm-hmm. And we hope you keep an ear out for an upcoming episode on Masonic lodges and what's going on with the violence against them. Also, keep an ear out for our ghost guns episode. As always, we want to hear from you. Let us know what you think about these things. I'm particularly interested, Noel, in what's going to come out, the emergent news about the origin of COVID-19, which we're still tracing, you know?
Yeah, I'm interested to see if, exactly right, Ben, if it does get traced somewhere other than that wet market, or maybe it was a combination. Who knows? These animals get around. I can imagine that the types of animals that are bought and sold at wet markets could also end up in mink farm situation. I don't know. I'm speculating here. But also interested to see how this industry will be impacted.
So give us your take, fellow conspiracy realist. We'll be back with more listener mail next week. In the meantime, if you would like to take a digital page from the book of Concerned Mink of Mal and Dan, please feel free to reach out to us. We make it easy to find us online.
We're Conspiracy Stuff on Twitter and Facebook. And on Instagram, we are Conspiracy Stuff Show. If you'd like, you could maybe give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to this show. That would be wonderful. We would very much appreciate it. And it would help our show a great deal. So if you have a moment, please take a chance and do that. If you don't want to do that, hey, guess what? We've got a phone number.
That's right. It's 1-833-STDWYTK. You can leave a message at the sound of Ben's dulcet tones. Try to keep it within that allotted 3 minutes and let us know what your name is, what to call you, and if it's okay to use your voice on air. And you might well hear yourself on one of our weekly listener mail episodes.
And if none of that quite launches your spaceship, you can always reach out to us directly. No social media, no telephone, just our good old-fashioned email address, available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
how this beguiling woman in her 50s,
she looked like $1 million,
scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.